Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome everybody, welcome, welcome. Well, if the thought of working alone and spending years drafting a manuscript has deterred you from writing the next great American novel, my first guest today says she can help you develop a first draft in just 30 days. Coming up around 12:30, we'll share a summer reading list with you. And to do that, we'll be joined by managing partner of Third Place Books, Robert Sindelar. He just made news here in Seattle and the New York Times, and I'll share a little of that later too. But you might want to grab a pen and paper so you can jot down some of his recommendations. First, I'm very pleased to welcome Denise Jaden. She's been fast drafting, as she calls it, since 2007 when she wrote the first draft of her debut novel, Losing Faith, in just 21 days. Her second novel, Never Enough, was released by Simon & Schuster in 2012. Her first nonfiction book was Writing with a Heavy Heart, Using Grief and Loss to Stretch Your Fiction. And her latest nonfiction book is called Fast Fiction, a guide to outlining and writing a first draft novel in 30 days. Denise Jaden, welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And we have today people joining us from all kinds of interesting places because you're joining us from Horse Camp.
I am.
So
Horse Camp in Canada.
Oh, sounds good to me. Can I come when I'm done?
Absolutely.
So let's get started by clarifying the purpose of this book, Denise, because, you know, some people might look at this and think, wow, a whole novel in 30 days. But that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about a first draft here. So tell us.
I'm talking about a first draft. And the 30 days is really just the drafting phase, the writing phase. But aside from that, I also take people through a planning phase, which can also be another maybe 30 days or so. So they don't go in just with a blank page and just have to launch in and write straight through for 30 days. They've got something to work from. So that's kind of the idea of it.
Yeah. And I would imagine that, you know, people who've not written a book before, this is really going to be helpful for them to get them start thinking, even if they deviate a little from your track. It definitely provides some structure for them.
Absolutely. And, you know, I honestly think that it's good for writers at any stage, whether you've already written and published many books or whether you are brand new to it. I think that you would get something out of it because there is something to be said for having a solid plan in place and just feeling prepared when you go to write a novel. So, and I think we can all learn from each other in that way. So, you know, I hope that my ideas will help a lot of writers.
Yes, yeah. So let's look at how you began writing, because it came later for you. You weren't really interested in reading and writing until I read your 30s. Is that correct?
Right. I would definitely consider myself a reluctant reader and writer growing up. And so that's one reason that I love to write for teens, and I love to go in and talk to teens, because that was absolutely me, the kid who did not want to read a book or write anything. And so it came much later, probably, I think it was in my 30s when I first started to enjoy reading, and then a little bit later when I started to notice things in books that I just loved the way sentences were put together and the words that the authors would use. And I thought, oh, I would love to be able to do that. So I think it was a few years that idea marinated in my brain. And then I just all of a sudden started writing. And I kind of started more as a journal, more kind of telling stories kind of about my life, like, hey, what if I did this and what if I did that? So that's kind of how I worked my way into writing, but it definitely came much later in life for me than it does for a lot of writers.
Right. And I understand that you began your first novel in the NaNoWriMo. We'll explain that in a little bit. Is that correct?
That's kind of correct. That's the first novel that I got published, but I actually had written two novels before that.
Okay, so you'd had some practice there, because this is what I think many people don't understand, is that most authors who are published for the first time have several in the cupboard that were not published.
Exactly.
It's
my
practice.
Very first novel that I wrote, it probably took me 2 or 3 years to write it. And then I spent another 2 or 3 years just revising it. But because I didn't have a lot of skill or understanding of how to write a book, I found that my revisions were not doing a whole lot of good.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took me a lot longer than it needed to, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think I would have been better off just to launch into the next one, you know, and figure out how storytelling works before I went too hard into trying to get it published.
Right. And so then you did your first debut novel during National Novel Writing Month, which they abbreviate as NaNoWriMo.
Right.
And we actually had Chris Beatty, who's the founder of that, on the show a couple of years ago.
Wonderful.
But a lot of people all get together in November online and they write their novel, right? It's sort of like over 300.
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah,
of
it's over 300,000.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And actually, some of those do go on to get published, as did yours.
Mm-hmm.
So, tell me, you said that your experience during that was helped by a mentor. So tell us how your mentor helped you and why finding the right mentor is important.
Oh, great. Yeah. It was actually my critique partner who I worked closely with back then. She had discovered NaNoWriMo the year before, and she had kind of played around with it a little bit but hadn't gone full into it. And so she said that this year I'm going to go full into it. This was in 2007. And she said, "And Denise, I want you to do it with me." And I said, "Well, what is it?" And she said, "Well, you write a novel in a month." And I said, "You're crazy. What do you mean a month? How is that even possible?" But she said, "You know, we're just going to talk about some ideas, and we're going to get our ideas down, and then we're going to do it together, and we'll cheer each other on, and you'll see it'll be awesome." And she was absolutely right. So really, I mean, I can't say it was all easy, but having somebody to work through the ideas with and talk it through with and talk to when you get stuck, that was just such a saving grace for me. It just, you know, you need that because not every day is going to be a great writing day. So you need to have some support in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is absolutely possible.
And so you liked this fast drafting worked for you, obviously. You had your debut novel developed this way. So how many have you done this way since then?
Well, I've done it every year since then. So 2007 and 2014 now. So this would be my seventh year at doing it. Plus, I've written a few more. I've fast drafted a few more in between. So I would say I've probably done 8 or 9.
Right. So
yeah.
I want to look at some of the steps you talk about in the book and talk about the book a little bit more in detail after the break. But before we go to break, since you completed that challenge in 21 days, you know, others don't make it in 30. There are others, some who complete it, but, you know, I'm guessing a large proportion don't actually finish
right.
in 30 days. So what did you do that worked really well for you?
Well, the main thing I think is that I had a plan for it. My critique partner, she, the one who was my mentor who kind of got me involved in this, she's really good at capturing the punch of your story, the hook for your story. And so as we were chatting through our ideas, she helped me form that hook. And that's part of what I do in the beginning of fast fiction, is I help take writers through that process of finding your hook. And so that you always have kind of a one-liner that you can come back to when you get stuck and you remember, oh, yeah, that's what my main heart of my story is supposed to be about. So I think that that's the main thing that I was able to do, is I was able to really find the heart of my story early, and I was able to hold on to that nugget and let that pull me through
right.
the whole draft.
Right. So, you know, I know from my experience out in the writing world that, you know, a lot of people like to critique others' work. I personally don't, but a lot do. So in a critique partner, I think it's critical that we find the right person. So what are some qualities that you look for in a critique partner?
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I would say that we all need different types of critique partners. My best critique partner may not be the same as yours. When I first started writing, I actually joined a website called Critique Circle, which is just critiquecircle.com. And it's a wonderful free site where you can go on and match yourself up with different people. You read their work, they'll read yours, and you give feedback. And it took me a number of years of doing that, but through that process, I got that main critique partner of mine, who I still work with today on novels. So, and I also met several other critique partners that I work with regularly. So it's a great way to meet people. And I would say that I went through a lot a lot of people that didn't work as well for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might be easier for me to say what didn't work
that well. Okay.
So I would have some people that would critique my work, and they would pick out the typos when I was really looking still for the early feedback. I was looking for, well, you know, if the characters are likable, or if the plot comes across, if it hooks you, if it grabs you, if it gets too slow in any areas. Those are the things that I wanted feedback on.
Right.
And I would usually lay those out as questions. And so if a critique partner doesn't come back with answers about those things, it doesn't matter if they're right or wrong. I really am just looking for opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I want to have more than one opinion. And I want them to be about the specific areas that I'm concerned about. So I would say that I really want a critique partner to be very clear in what they are saying to me. If they felt that it really dragged in an area, I don't want them to be afraid to tell me that. So it's really important that they can be honest, but they can still be friendly. You know, I don't think it's helpful at all to have somebody come back and tell you, yeah, I didn't like it, I couldn't get into it at all.
Right.
Well, yeah, it's a lot more helpful if you can tell me where you lost interest and specifically why. So those are the things that I think are really important for me. And I personally really like clarity more than I like friendliness. So I'm okay if you're a little bit blunt about saying what you want to say, as long as you say it clearly, because I really want to make my books better.
Right.
Whereas somebody else might need a gentler hand,
mm-hmm,
from a critique partner, they might want somebody to say it, you know, a little nicer and maybe not be as blunt about it. So.
I think your comments are spot on there, because I think too many people just take input from anybody and who's willing to share. And it's not always valuable. We want value in a critique partner. So
exactly.
Great advice there. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll continue talking with Denise Jaden about Fast Fiction, A Guide to Outlining and Writing a First Draft Novel in 30 Days. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Please stay with us.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Bringing you fresh perspectives every day. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Denise Jaden. She's fast drafted her debut novel, Losing Faith, in 21 days during National Novel Writing Month. And she's here today talking about fast fiction, a guide to outlining and writing a first draft novel in 30 days. So I wanted to talk, Denise, a little bit about plot, because I think many people get hung up on what is plot, what is story, and sometimes miss the boat on both. So you tell me how you define plot.
Well, I think of plot as the structure, kind of like a coat hanger on which you hang your whole story on. And so if you can hang it nicely, then it will flow nicely and it'll have a nice rhythm to it. But if you've got the kink in your coat hanger and it's sitting on a weird angle, then it doesn't hang as nicely. So I think of the plot as the structure that you're going to hang the story on, and I break it down. I read a lot of screenwriting books, and so that's kind of where I get my whole understanding of plot. And so I break it down, like screenwriting does, into the three-act structure. And so your first act would basically be your setup, where you introduce your main characters, and you arrive at an inciting incident. So something will happen to a main character which they can't turn back from. They have to go ahead and they have to change their lives because of this incident. So that's kind of act one, and that inciting incident launches us into act two. So act two is the middle of the book, and that's like all the twists and turns and sometimes red herrings. Your characters might go the wrong direction. Even though they're trying to reach their goal, they might do something that brings them further from their goal. And then the third act is the high-paced conclusion, where you want to wrap things up and bring them to some sort of satisfying resolution.
Right. And then I define story as how they get there in the end. It's the events that happen chronologically or flashbacks.
Exactly.
Even. And that's your story.
Story, too, kind of weaves its way through the plot.
Yeah.
So it can take twists and turns. But, yeah, I do think of story that way as well.
So, and you talk about all of this in the book, Fast Fiction. Mm-hmm. You also talk about character development, and I'd like to touch on that a little because, in my opinion, and I read a lot, but I think many potentially good stories fail because the characters are not fully developed. Or mm-hmm. even if it's a place, oftentimes a good book will have the character, the place will be a character too. So tell us how we make characters interesting enough that we care about them, that they're not just one-dimensional.
Right. Well, I spend a lot of time in fast fiction developing characters, and for me that is probably the most important part of getting ready to write a novel, is to get to know my characters on a really deep level. So I have lots of exercises and things like that in the book that will help guide you through in getting to know your characters. But one thing that I learned from Donald Moss, who is he's a New York agent, literary agent, and he teaches a whole bunch of workshops on character development and story. Writing the Breakout Novel is his big best-selling book. And one of the things that he suggests doing, which I love, is he will take a character and figure out what the three main adjectives are that would describe that character, and then he'll get you to write a paragraph using those three main adjectives. Then the next step is find the opposites of those adjectives and write a paragraph showing the opposites of those adjectives. because what you want to do is think of a character as a real person. So even if one of your characters is by nature they're very sweet, there's probably times in their life that things will happen that will make them act maybe very nasty. And so you want to find the breadth of that character. You want to find what would make them sweet and what would make them act not so sweet, and bring those out in your writing. And once you can find the whole realm of that character, then you'll know them, and you feel like, I think with even with secondary characters, even with minor characters, if you can do this exercise for them, then you will be able to show them on the page as a real and fully realized person.
Right, right. And so some of the, you know, I read a book which was made into a series, a TV series, and I watched the TV series because there was so much, you know, hoo-ha about it. But I have to tell you, I did not like one of the characters in that TV series. And so for me, it was a failure. I didn't enjoy it.
Right.
I didn't watch it.
Did you enjoy the book, or you didn't enjoy that either?
The book, I think, obviously, they have more time to flesh things out in a book, because I think it was a 3-series program. But it's very important to watch that and make your characters likable. Even your protagonist has to have some likability about. Even your antagonist, excuse me, has to have some likability factor.
Yeah, one thing I like to say is that if your bad guy is all bad, then he's not real. Because even bad people in our world, they think what they're doing is right for them. They do have some good intentions, you know, even if they just think they're doing the best thing for them.
Yeah.
And so I think we need to find that side of even our antagonist, the side of them that thinks that they're doing the right thing.
And you have some great tips in the book about how to do that. So let's talk briefly about outlining, because I talk with authors all the time. I have a lot of friends who are full-time writers, and we seem split about the outline. Some like to outline every minute detail. Others take a more free-flowing approach and say they follow where the story or the character takes them. You believe in outlining, so talk to us about that.
Well, in my book, I actually call the outline that we come to in the end of our planning, I call it a story plan. I actually don't like to call it an outline, because I find that some people find that word very stringent to their writing. And so I call it a story plan, and there's always room to sway away from it, or there's room to expand on things. So it's not stringent at all. So basically, I just want you to have an idea of your theme, of your story, what the heart of your story is going to be, and then we plan out your first and your second and your third act. And there's lots and lots of room to go different directions in what you plan out. But I think that if you have a plan of where to go, then you can always stray away from it and come back to that plan if you get stuck. Whereas if you don't have any plan, you know, you could get partway through your writing month and then you think, what do I do now? So I like to have a plan in place. But when I first started writing, like I told you, with Losing Faith, I talked it through with my critique partner, and it was a lot of that conversation that ended up being my loose outline, and that worked very well for me. In later books, I actually tried to make the outlines more and more detailed, and actually, in the end, that didn't work as well for me. With one particular book, I made the outline, I think it was 38,000 words just for the outline, which is almost a book in itself.
Wow, yeah.
And that book, when I actually came to the drafting portion of it, it turned out to be just the driest piece of writing I've ever written. It just had no life to it. So for me, that didn't work. For some people, they want to know all the details up front, and that's okay. But my story plan does leave room for being as detailed or as non-detailed as you want to go. So
yeah.
But I think each person needs to learn what works for them in that regard.
Yes, yes. It's practice. It's practicing and finding out what does work for you. And I think you make a really valid point in there. You talk about a book that you were so hated by the time you'd finished. You almost gave up on it. And you put it in a drawer for a year. And when you pulled it out, you were like, wow, this is really good.
I know, yeah. So, you know, I don't think when we're drafting, I don't think we have a clear picture of what we're doing at all. So that's why I always tell people, put it aside. Don't even look at it for at least 2 weeks, but longer if you want to.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And so what would you like to leave our listeners with today, Denise?
Well, I just would love to leave listeners with a sense of empowerment over this, because, you know, I think that this, all you have to do with this is you have to believe in yourself. You have to believe in the process and that you'll be able to follow along and it'll work for you too.
Mm-hmm.
And really, anybody can do this. If you've never picked up a pen, if you've never written a story, I still guarantee that you can write a novel in 30 days. I believe that of everybody. All it is doing the work, sitting down, following the book through, coming up with your ideas as I lead you through prompts, but anybody, I believe, can do this.
Yeah. And I would agree with you if they follow your instruction here. So just to give listeners a very quick idea, you go day by day, you give them a little motivation, if you will. You give them mm-hmm. a simple task to do.
Yes.
On a daily basis and a daily quote to think about. So I think,
right.
And then you break it down day by day, as I said. Denise Jaden.
Yeah, I don't leave you on your own. That's
no.
The thing. Yeah.
Denise Jaden, I really appreciate you being with us today. We had a little interference on the phone that last 5 minutes there, but I appreciate you joining us from Horse Camp there, and you have
awesome.
A fantastic week with what you're doing out there.
Oh, thank you. You too, Vicky. Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. And you can find out more about Denise Jaden at denisejaden.com, denisejaden.com. And her book again, Fast Fiction, A Guide to Outlining and Writing a First Draft Novel in 30 Days. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Everywhere like
papers everywhere like
oh, this one says all right no more. That one says don't lock the door. Writers are a funny breed.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Burlingame Veterinary Consulting, we cover the world of animals. This week, July 13th, we'll welcome for the first time one of our newest members of the animal world family, Darcy Pariso, animal communicator extraordinaire. I'm already receiving rave reviews about her work, and she'll join us in the studio for the entire show. So get your questions about your animal friends ready and plan to call in for a free reading with Darcy. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
Listen live at 1150kknw.com. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Let things be. Writers are a funny breed. Writers are a funny breed.
Writers are a funny breed. Where did you find that from, Eric?
That's Jane Siberry.
Thank you. I will not disagree. We are a funny breed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm very pleased to be joined now by Robert Sindelar. He's the managing partner at Third Place Books. And Robert's primary interests are literature in translation, drama, and theater, and discussing the place that books, reading, and bookstores occupy in our lives. Rather appropriate, then, that he's at Third Place Books. Robert Sindelar, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Vicky.
Very pleased to have you, and a special thanks, because I know today's an extraordinarily busy day for you at Third Place Books, so we really do appreciate you being with us. For people, I think everybody up here is really familiar with Third Place Books. It's one of the first places I went to when I moved up to Seattle. People said you must go there. But tell us, if you would, just a little bit about Third Place for those who are not familiar.
Yeah, absolutely. We have two stores in the Seattle area, the greater Seattle area. One in Lake Forest Park, our main store, which is, you know, rather large general independent bookstore with new and used books mixed. We have a large gathering area with a cafe, Honey Bear Bakery, and a couple other restaurants and a stage where there's music on the weekends. And we have author events and all other kinds of community events throughout the week. And we also have a store in the Seattle area called Ravenna Third Place in the Ravenna neighborhood, which is a little smaller, but same kind of idea, you know, new and used books mixed. It has a great restaurant there as well and a beer and wine pub in the basement.
Yeah, well, I think you can go there and spend a good deal of time and get lost. And I love this on your webpage. I'll just share it really quickly. Why Third Place? Sociologist Ray Oldenburg suggests that each of us need three places. First, the home. Second, the workplace or school. And beyond that is the place where we interact, experiencing and celebrating commonality as well as diversity. And that's the third place. So hence the name. Great, great. So you are here today to talk with us about some summer books, book reading. So I have a list here that we're going to talk about. So let's just kick off with some summer books that you recommend, Richard.
Yeah, so I think the, you know, a lot of people read more in summer, certainly, you know, after school, we get a lot of kids coming in with their summer reading list, and adults are taking a little more time off, and so they're looking for books maybe they don't have time for the rest of the year. And I think some people take it very literally. They're thinking, you know, summer book, they want to read a book that actually takes place during summer. I think there's a few good ones for that. There's a really wonderful book called The Summer Book by Tove Jansson, which takes place in on this kind of unspoiled island in the Gulf of Finland, and it's about this young girl, a six-year-old girl, and her grandmother. And it really is it's a very simple novel. It's about the simple kind of pleasures of life, and very much kind of about the life cycle. And so it's very much about the young girl starting life and her grandmother, who's, you know, kind of seeing the end of her life.
Right. Now, is Tove Jansson also an illustrator? Is that the same person?
She is. Yeah. The comic strip series.
She did a comic strip series, and she did Alice in Wonderland and Lord of the Rings.
Yep. Yeah. You got it. That's the same person.
That's so funny, because I only came across her work last week. So it's funny you bring that up as the first book here. Yeah.
Yeah. And then maybe something a little bit more, maybe a little more contemporary. And there's a book that came out a few years ago from a really great writer named Colson Whitehead called Sag Harbor. And it's set in the summer of 1985 in Sag Harbor in the Hamptons. And it's set in this small African-American resort community. And it's just about this 15-year-old kid and how he spends his summer. And it's, you know, the big pressures of the summer, or whether, you know, this is a summer you still ride your bike places, or you're too cool and you walk places, and there are new handshakes, and there's new music that some music's cool and some music's not cool, and new Coke has been introduced. And so it has this kind of, you know, anybody who grew up during the 80s has this great kind of nostalgic feel. And also Colson's an incredible writer.
Right. Love it. And then you have Travels with Charlie.
Yeah, so I think for something like a little older, you know, and really just kind of classic Americana, you know, for people who are taking road trips or just kind of wish they were taking a road trip, you know, this is a chronicle of John Steinbeck's 1960 road trip with his French standard poodle. And it was kind of late in John Steinbeck's life. I think he knew, you know, that his health wasn't that great, and he wanted to see the country again. And he kind of does this. He kind of circumvents the country. So he goes across the top, comes through the Pacific Northwest, goes down through California, and back across through the South. And in this big camper van. And stops and just talks to people along the places and makes observations. And it's, you know, he's just such a great writer. And to me, like, that just feels like summer.
Yeah. Do you know, I want to do the same thing. So look out for a book called Travels with Vicky and her border collie Dylan. So the good old mystery. I mean, I know people who just are like people chain smoke. They are that way with mystery books. So let's talk about a couple of mystery books.
Yeah, so I was trying to think of a couple things that maybe were at least find one book that wasn't, you know, just kind of the obvious, you know, your kind of, you know, A-list mystery writer that everybody knows about already. And one that's really kind of taken off for us is a debut mystery by Derek Miller called Norwegian by Night. And it's about this 82-year-old ex-Marine who's living in Oslo, and he moved there with his family. And he witnesses a murder, and this woman is murdered by it's this Balkan gang, and she has a 6-year-old boy, and this 82-year-old ex-Marine rescues the boy and takes him off into the woods keep him safe. And it's about their adventure, and they don't speak the same language. There's obviously this huge generational gap, and it's this foreign landscape for him, and it's this survival tale. It's thrilling, but it's also about the bond that the two of them form.
Sounds interesting. And then I love John le Carré's books.
Yeah, so I thought one of the, you know, it's a lot of things that happen during summer with books is, you know, there are a lot of movies that get made out of books. And so the film from the 2008 novel, A Most Wanted Man, is coming out very soon. And a lot of people are interested. It's obviously, it's John le Carré. It's a great novel, The Most Wanted Man. But also, it's also starring Philip Seymour Hoffman in his last performance. So a lot of people are interested in that. And it is a typical le Carré thriller where a lot of political intrigue, a lot of espionage, and this one's set, relatively contemporary, set during the War on Terror.
So I'm going to look out for that movie, too, with Philip Seymour Hoffman, since he was one of my favorite actors. And so in the book world, what's new and exciting?
Well, there's this a book that's coming out. It comes out, I believe, this week or next week. It was chosen by independent booksellers across the country as their number one pick for July, and it's called Queen of the Tierling by Erik Johansson. And it is this completely, you know, fabricated world that's kind of like The Hunger Games or Game of Thrones, and it has tons of magic and mystery and romance. And it's the story of a young princess who's raised in exile and is going to take over her mother's throne, and she is her kingdom is being threatened at every corner. And there's this really powerful Tierling sapphire that she's learning how to harness the powers to save her kingdom. And it's just this book that is just everybody is has gotten enthusiastic for, and she's actually coming to the store later this month as well.
Oh, okay. So they can check out thirdplacebooks.com to see the event schedule on that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then this one, I'm imagining, is going to be a huge hit because it's Downton Abbey set in the world of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. So tell us about that one.
Yeah, exactly. Longbourn by Joe Baker. And that one just came out in paperback. And it's just, it's like two, like, you know, all these fans of Downton Abbey, of all these Jane Austen fans. And it is the downstairs life of Pride and Prejudice, and where there's just as much kind of romance and intrigue happening downstairs as there is in the original Jane Austen novel. And she captures that world, but also really, you know, doesn't try to mimic Jane Austen. You know, she really makes her own story. And so, yeah, that's a great read for that.
Interesting. And then science fiction, I know, is a huge, not one of my favorites genres, but I know it's a huge genre. So what's happening in the world of that? What do you recommend for science fiction?
I would say, you might even like this, even if sci-fi is not your thing. The Martian by Andy Weir is, I'd say, a really great crossover book for sci-fi. I mean, really hardcore science fiction fans love this book, and people who don't read science, I don't read very much science fiction at all, and I just devoured this book. It's kind of set up, the way they sold it was it's Apollo 13 meets Castaway. But the idea, the concept is there's this manned expedition to Mars, and they make it there. They're on the ground. There's this storm. They get back to their ship. They get away. They think one of their crew has been killed in the wake of this storm on Mars, and it turns out he wasn't. He's fine, and he's marooned there, has no way to contact anyone, and he knows the next expedition. I think it's like would be there a year and a half later, and he has to figure out a way to survive for a year and a half. And it's such an interesting thing because there's all this real science that they talk about what he has to do to figure out how to make water and all these things and make food. And he ends up, there's this sequence of the book where he ends up growing potatoes. And it's like, it's like 50 pages of growing potatoes. And it's heart pounding thriller. And it's about potatoes. It's a great story. It's a great voice.
Oh, I have to check that out then. And so then for those who prefer nonfiction, what do you recommend in the way of nonfiction?
Well, the two books there are two very different books that I really liked for a nonfiction this year. One, which is a great Seattle book, is called Delancey by Molly Weisenberg. And she's a Seattle foodie. She's has a blog called Orangette, which is extremely popular. She wrote a memoir called A Homemade Life, which was a New York Times bestseller. And this book is a memoir. It's recipes as well, but it's about her her husband, her new husband at the time, decided to open an artisanal pizza joint. And it's about their experience as a couple of that happening, and her obviously being so involved in food. And so there's very much about the food part of it, and then working in the kitchen, and then also how that stressed their relationship and how they figured out a way to come through that. And so it just, great recipes, great stories, a great relationship book.
Yeah, sounds good. And then Hotel Florida, Madrid, 1936, based on the Spanish, can't speak today, the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah, so I think for somebody who's maybe a little bit more interested, a good a nice history book, but also a great story, Hotel Florida by Amanda Vale is a really great choice. So it takes place during the Spanish Civil War. It's focusing on the actual Hotel Florida in Madrid, which is where Ernest Hemingway, Martha Gellhorn, the filmmaker Robert Capra, all ended up in. It was actually, there's three others. It's like three couples where they all artists.
Wow.
And all convened, and they were all, they went there despite the fact that because there was a civil war, really, mm-hmm. and they wanted, very much in the Hemingway, wanted to find, authenticity and what was real and be able to report on that and write about it. And Capra taking photos and filming it. They wanted to be in the middle of that. So it's about all that history, but it's also about the relationships amongst them and during that time. So really kind of just a great history, but also kind of a great story as well.
Yeah, sounds it. And then I know we're racing against the clock here because we have to let you go. You're super busy, but non-traditional literary thrillers. Now, you're talking non-traditional thrillers or...
Yeah, I'd say these are two books that I really like this kind of book in the summertime. They're very literary, but at the same time, they're kind of, you start them and you don't realize it's a thriller. It's just a great story. And then slowly you realize something very wrong is going on, and it just kind of drives you through the book. So the first one's Dinner by Herman Koch, which takes place over a dinner in Amsterdam where two couples are talking about the misdeeds of their two 15-year-old boys. And you think that that's what the book is going to be about. What did the kids do? And that's revealed to you halfway through the book, and you realize it's what the mystery is really about the true nature of these parents and what these parents end up doing at the end of the book. It's very challenging for anyone who has children to read about. And the second one is The Infatuations by Javier Marías, who's a Spanish novelist. And it starts this very simple story of this woman who goes to this cafe every day and is obsessed with this couple that sits there. All her imagined things about what this couple's really about. And then very slowly it turns into it's almost like a Hitchcock movie. It reminded me a lot of Rear Window or Dial M for Murder. A really great read.
Ah, love those. I'm going to have to check that out. Robert Sindelar, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, absolutely.
Sounds like some great books there. And, of course, Robert's the managing partner at Third Place Books. You can find out more about Third Place Books at thirdplacebooks.com. And don't forget to check out their events page and their pre-order list and all that good stuff. Robert Sindler, thanks so much.
Thank you, Vicky.
And please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We'll be right back.
At home, sitting in my favorite nook. My girl's trying to get me eat some dinner she cooked. I'm reading a book, girl, I'm reading a book. Don't you ever interrupt me while I'm reading a book. On the shoulder, I got pulled over. Pig's trying to get me while my window lower. I'm reading a book, pig, I'm reading a book. Don't you ever interrupt me while I'm reading a book. Why all these people always interrupting me? What have I got to do to try to make them say?
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Hi, this is Susan Harmon inviting you to join me for the Susan Harmon Hour every Friday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150. Expect surprises, fun, and information from a wide variety of guests sharing their views on up-to-date issues from a spiritual perspective. Again, that's the Susan Harmon Hour, every Friday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun. Coming up next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, Dori Clark, author of Reinventing You, asks the question, are you where you want to be in your career? And dares you to imagine a better future. Join us Monday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m. for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Radio with no added hormones or preservatives. All natural. Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
What? Oh, my producer's having fun with the music today, Mr. Eric Ryder. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. What was that?
That's Julian Smith. I'm reading a book. I mean, how many rap songs do you hear that are about reading books?
I don't know. I was surprised you found the one about writers being a strange breed. So.
Or especially one with a bagpipe breakdown. There's not that many, so... Thought we had to slip that in there when we're talking about our summer reading list.
There you go. So do you, I want to ask you if you have, do you have favorite author, favorite books?
You know, I've recently, and not for the reason that most people are going to think so.
Yeah, right. This, now, listeners, be warned. This sounds like a cop out here.
No, but I recently really got into the Sherlock Holmes series. I've been kind of like a casual admirer of the stories my whole life, but I'd say probably about 4 years ago, I really got back into Sherlock Holmes and Arthur Conan Doyle, and not because of the recent modern update of Sherlock that's been really popular on PBS and BBC, but actually I got into it because of the Granada series with Jeremy Brett from a few years back.
Okay.
And I just think that's absolute perfection when it comes to adapting those stories. And so I watched all those, very much enjoyed them. But then I went back to the books because I was craving more. So I've been just kind of diving into those recently. And I find it perfect summer reading because so many of them are short stories.
Right,
so you can get through one in, you know, a short period of time, a couple hours maybe, as opposed to, you know, investing in a whole novel. But there's also, of course, a great like 3-4 Sherlock Holmes novels that are worth checking out as well. So that's been my summer reading. I know it's not trendy or the hot new writers or anything. I'm going with the old guys. But
I think reading is all about escaping a little.
Yeah.
And you know, broadening the mind, yes, but we also want to escape and experience new experiences. And you're definitely not going to experience a Sherlock Holmes moment unless you read about it.
Probably not. And, you know, I did have to make the pilgrimage while I was in London this last time and went to 221B. 221B Baker Street.
Yep. Baker Street. Yep. Yeah, I was going to say. I've been there.
And they've got a very cool little Sherlock Holmes museum that's kind of fun to tour.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they do. Well, thanks for sharing that. I guess I like fast-paced thrillers when I'm reading. Because I read such a lot for work. Mm-hmm. And so I think my favorite go-to authors, if you will, are John Sanford, the Lucas Davenport series. I have to confess I have a little crush on the protagonist. How can you have a crush on a protagonist in a novel? That's very sad, but I do. His name is Lucas Davenport. And I also like David Baldacci a lot. I'm reading one of his right now, and he has a couple of good series out there too. So we're almost right at the end of our show. And before we go today, I just wanted to give a shout out, first of all, to Robert Sindelar, because he was doing, I don't know if you've heard about the standoff between Amazon and Hatchet, but Amazon is refusing to, or it's discouraging sales of Hatchet books by failing to stock them, delaying delivery, removing pre-order buttons from its website. And this has been going on quite a while.
Another reason to support your local bookstore.
Yeah. And of course, Amazon is up here in Seattle. And Robert points this out. You know, it's not about good guy, bad guy. But Robert, who just did our summer reading list for us, Robert Sindelar, managing partner of Third Place Books, you know, says it's all about delivering books to the readers. You know, he feels it's a complete, there's an article in the New York Times you can actually read, booksellers score some points in Amazon spat with Hatchet. And he was also written up in the Seattle Stranger. What Robert says is that our goal as retailers is to connect people to books. And he actually went out last month when some of the books that Amazon was blocking on their website, he went out and actually hand-delivered those books to customers who wanted to get their hands on the book as soon as possible. So Third Place Books, big shout-out to them. And a big shout-out to also the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation. They have a lot of events coming up this summer for people with Parkinson's, for caregivers, for family members. So check them out at NWPF.org, founded by a local guy whose mother had, I believe it was his mom, had Parkinson's. I met him a couple of years ago, and as you know, my mom had Parkinson's. They're doing great work. So if you've got Parkinson's, don't feel you're alone on that either. Check out NWPF.org. All right, we have to head out of here. Coming next week, we're going to be talking about how to rebrand yourself a little. In today's competitive world and marketplace, and maybe shake things up at work. So thank you for being with us today. You can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. If you have comments, feedback, or questions, or if you missed any of the books and would like to get a reading list from me, happy to email that to you. You can reach me at info@conversationslive.net, info@conversationslive.net. And you can also chat with me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair and on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And you can find podcasts at conversationslive.net. Thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate your time. And we'll be back next week, as I said, with an all new live show. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Coming up next week on Conversations Live, where Vicky St. Clair, Dori Clark, author of Reinventing You, asks the question, are you where you want to be in your career? And dares you to imagine a better future. Join us Monday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m. for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.